Hey, welcome to, I guess, you know what, this is like stuff we like. There isn't going to be an actual show this week, but I wanted to get some content out there because we recorded an entire show, found out it was on the internal microphone, and then everything screwed up, and I just kind of fell from there.
Well,
I'm not going to post it.
I appreciate you trying, Dean.
But you know what, for the first...
I think it's funny that covering the microphone when the wind came is all in
nothing.
Vain.
Did nothing! I can't believe that, but for the first official time on the show... Hopefully you're more recurring guest when we'll actually talk about weird news, and we actually had some good news this week. Dylan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dean.
And now for stuff we like, which I promised I would let you do. I want you to talk about anything you like.
Well, on the Soul Kitchen this week, I started off, it was an episode that...
Oh yeah, that was an entire thing. It was supposed to promote the show. I promoted your show so many times. And now that was all for nothing. No one heard that.
It's okay. Well, they're hearing it now. Listen to The Soul Kitchen on WSJU Radio from St. John's University from 1:30 to 3:30.
Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday on TuneIn.com. So check it out there.
There we go. So you got your plug.
Yeah, but I did a show. Half of the show was movie soundtracks and stuff in jazz and funk. But the first half of it was talking about Billie Holiday, who on Tuesday this past week, the 7th, she would have been 100 years old. And... Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to me. I was listening to a lot of her music in preparation for my show, and I had never really fully appreciated her as an artist until then. I mean, I always appreciated her spot in history and the respect that so many musicians had for her, but I never really understood it until I listened, because this is a woman who had everything and nothing at the same time.
Oh, yeah? Explain.
Like... When she finally did make it big, she had a really rough childhood. She was born and her father immediately left to become a jazz guitarist, and that never happened.
No.
I mean, he played guitar in some things, and then eventually when Billie started singing again, she actually met him in one of the groups. But like, that was just once, and then he was just gone. He just kind of disappeared. But her mother, Billie Holiday's mother, Sadie Holiday, she worked various odd jobs. She came from Baltimore, and Billie grew up in Baltimore, having been born in Philadelphia. And by the time she was 12, her mother was working as a prostitute. And Billie, when she was 12, was running errands in that brothel, you know? And so she was coming from that time, and by the time she was 14, she had already done jail time for herself being a prostitute.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. So... She comes from that rough life, and then she finally breaks free partially of all that. In 1933, she makes her first recordings with Benny Goodman, and she's becoming more and more famous among musicians, and people are trying to play with her more because she's got great improvisational qualities and a real signature voice that has a real musicality to it.
She does.
And unfortunately, at that time, I mean, she gets married, which would normally be a good thing, but she married an abusive guy who was also a drug dealer. And so when she's finally attaining that success, she gets hooked on alcohol and heroin. And just the pain that you hear in her voice and everything that she's saying, it speaks to a real true place in the heart. It's a place that everyone has that's sort of forever painful. Everyone kind of has something like that, you know, from things that happen, regrets and all that. But she was singing about that while she was living it. And it's such a horrifying juxtaposition. You finally get the recognition and the success that you... worked for and deserve, yet at the same time,
enjoy it.
Yeah, you can't really, you know, because you're addicted, you can't fill that emptiness. And that was a really sad thing, and that comes out in every song. And you know, it's interesting. Musicians, I find, and singers as well, they either have one or the other when it comes down to lots of soul and incredible musicianship. Her soul complemented her musicianship instead of overshadowing it, you know, in many respects. That can happen. So, It's very interesting listening to all of her music and things like that. I mean, a CD that I'm holding right here, it's called Lady in Satin. It was her last album, so this is 1959. And she died, she was only 44 when she died. And that was just...
Wow.
And she was dying of cirrhosis of the liver, and as she was dying, she had 70 cents in the bank. Because in the 50s, throughout the middle of the 50s, the records that she made in the 30s and 40s that made her famous were out of print. So she wasn't earning any royalty money.
Oh,
and
God.
She had 70 cents in the bank and $750 on her person, and that was some sort of legal thing that had to go to someone. I forget exactly what it was. But she was handcuffed to her bed by the feds because she had drug possession.
Oh, for crying out loud.
And she died handcuffed to her bed.
Oh.
And this last album, you really hear she's starting to kind of... She's still excellent, and it sounds really good, but she's not... She doesn't have that vigor. It's a very melancholy album. And the first song that she does on is called I'm a Fool to Want You. And that was actually written and originally recorded by Frank Sinatra. And Sinatra said that Billie Holiday was the single greatest influence on his life and on his singing. And they were the same age. They were born the same year, 1915. And they came up at the same time. Billie got a little bit more famous before Frank did. And because I guess what, like the 30s, Billie Holiday got famous, like 1933. And she was still a kid then. She was like 17, 18, maybe. Not even, you know. Frank didn't really get famous until his mid to late 20s.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's
so like the 40s, you know, and that's Frank. But he said he spent all that time listening to her because she lived it. And they, and to me, I always say, you know, on my show, I even said it this week, you know, when I talk to my friends and people such as yourself about Billie Holiday and things like that, I always compare her and liken her to a female equivalent of Sinatra. They have that same approach.
It's not a hard leap to make. That's the thing.
It's not. And I feel like it's a fair leap, though, because they both have that balladeer tenderness. They keep saying, you know, I've lived through it. Here's what it's like. Here's how I feel about it. And I know you've been there, too. That's what it kind of is like. I feel like you can't really compare them musically because Billie Holiday had a vastly superior, in my opinion, voice to Frank Sinatra. Even my friend Sal,
here we go with the controversial opinions.
Well, yeah, well, even my friend Sal, who sings a lot of Sinatra songs, and he has a voice that comes from that sort of old-timey Italian style. He's really good. He even said to me once on one of my shows, he goes, you know, Sinatra didn't have an amazing voice. He didn't. He just had, you know, the attitude, and he was able to do really well with what he had, with what he got.
It's time for me to bring down the class and demeanor of this. Which is what we did on the show that I'm not going to do because fucking internal microphone.
It happens.
It does. But the thing of it is, there was. Are you familiar with YouTube phenomenons?
What do you mean, like in general? Yeah,
like epic rap battles of history.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There was one with Frank Sinatra and Freddie Mercury, and I'm like, if we were going on voice talent alone, I don't think you could compare the two.
No, never.
You really could not.
I mean,
not.
Because when it comes to comparing, and media loves to do that. They love to compare people and to draw sides.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it makes it easier to market to people that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's a better way to make people understand.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, he's like this, but he's more like that, but he's diametrically opposed to this, like they're rivals or something.
Right, like, it's like before we were talking, like I was saying to Dean that I was trying to describe the Budos Band, and the Budos Band was, as a combination of, like, Black Sabbath and James Brown and a lot of different things, but they're really, again, that's the only way I can really liken it. You have to listen to it to understand, because really, they're only tangentially like that.
Yeah, and you know, what I did immediately was I compared it to, like, you said it was, no, it wasn't, it was Budos Band. No, it was Mundo you were talking about, right?
Mundo, yeah.
Yeah, it was another band, and I'm like, oh, they're like the White Stripes, but they play old and new Beatles music. I'm like, and you're like, that's not incorrect.
You know, but that's the thing. It's hard to really placate, but when it comes down to, I guess the main difference in the way that you can't compare Billy and Frank is that, well, one's female, one's male. You know, male vocals are vastly different from female vocals.
It's like NBA and WNBA.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or maybe not, I don't know.
They've got different audiences, that's the thing. And you have to, if you're a fan of one, you may have to coax them to, like, try the other one. You know what I mean?
You know, but that's the interesting thing is that I really feel because Frank was so influenced by Billy, he was able to very naturally, not replicate, but at least continue the style that she was doing and kind of understand the ethic behind it, that he was able to execute it in his own way. So when I think of either of them, to me, they seem to be two sides of the same coin. But again, you can't compare them on vocals alone because Billy had a vastly superior voice. You know, that's the truth. Neither of them had real musical training either. You know, Frank a little bit, I think. Billy, really not at all. Yeah. You know, that's the thing.
You know, this is bringing me back to when I actually, like, guested on Soul Kitchen with you every Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, this takes me back, too. I miss you. You can come by any time. Just skip work, man.
I am. that's like the main
It's easier said than done.
Yeah, but I listen at work sometimes, but I'm not completely slammed.
Right.
Thank you. Yeah, I do. You got a good show going on. But it reminds me of when I guessed it on there. Like, you, I have said this a multitude of times. You are like an encyclopedia.
Oh, thank you,
of
Dean.
Jazz
thank
musicians.
You.
You really are.
Thank you.
Like, you were able, like, on command, you were able to recite Billie Holiday's career and, like, end of, like, just given a prompt.
Thanks.
You barely had to do your
research. I retain a lot of what I read.
You did
I've
your
been
research.
Blessed.
You did your research for your show, but it's like it, when some people have to do that for like a test or something, they immediately forget it afterwards. You on the other hand.
Thanks. I've been blessed with the ability to retain. Thank God.
And in between all of the puns and word avalanches that you do,
thank you.
On your Facebook group, you also have like the very informative, like, oh, this musician would have turned 75 today, or this musician died. I'm like, wow. I could, like, listen. I could, like, subscribe to an RSS feed of just you.
I mean, certain dates will always stick out in my mind because either it'll be associated with myself or someone that I know, or, like, a lot of things happened on it. Like, December 8th is, like, a big musical day because you have Jim Morrison was born, Greg Allman was born, Jimmy Smith, the jazz organist, was born, John Lennon died, you know, and I think John Bonham from Led Zeppelin also died on that
Hold on.
Day.
I'm gonna try something here.
Yeah.
Is there anything that happened that you can recollect in music history, jazz, or
this is going to make me look like a fool.
No, July 25th.
July 25th.
Just random date.
Not July 25th. I can tell you about July 17th.
Go with that.
July 17th was... July 17th was the day Vince Guaraldi and Joe Morello were born, and on the same day, 1926.
I can barely remember, like, other people's birthdays.
I'm not finished. July 17th, 67 was the day Coltrane died, as well as 1959, Billie Holiday died on July 17th as well. So...
Hot damn.
Full circle, right there.
Like, a week off, but, like, you made it work. Holy crap. And that's, like, a lot of things
Thank
happened
you.
On that day.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, again, that's why I remember them, because a lot of things happened. That's why.
Well,
I wasn't even there. But I've only been around since the mid-90s, so...
So, like, how about... Like, I'm sure jazz didn't like come out of nowhere for you. Like, you want to go into like how
I got into it?
Yeah, definitely. Like that's yeah.
Well, I started out
because that's your thing.
It's interesting. Growing up, I listened to a lot of different things because my parents have vastly different musical tastes. They share some common ground when it comes to classic rock, but certain things my mom will listen to, my dad will just outright say it sucks. And stuff that my mom listens to, that my dad rather listens to, my mom will say outright, it sucks. So they listen to a lot of different things. My mom is more into, like, pop and folk type things, I find. My dad, who introduced me to jazz, is a metal guy. His favorite bands are Kiss and Iron Maiden.
Hold on, I think you kind of glossed over that.
No, I didn't.
Introduced me to jazz was also a metal guy. I'm like... Hold on.
Well,
I know a couple of metalheads, and I know their tastes don't overlap that much.
Well, I remember it because I listened to a lot of classic rock as a result because I was the middle ground. That's what is still on the most because that's what they can agree on. And, you know, my dad, again, he's a metal guy, but he's open-minded. Like, I can take him to jazz shows, and he can appreciate it. My mom, I feel like, would get bored really quick. That's just how it is. Yeah. And that's fine. You know, everyone has their own tastes. But I remember... while listening to classic rock, I was playing clarinet in elementary school and middle school, and I was in the jazz band in sixth grade, and then I wasn't in a jazz band again until college after that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I would have done it in high school, but it conflicted with academic team, and I was captain of the academic team, so I couldn't do it, unfortunately. Wednesdays, man, always busy. But
always freaking Wednesdays.
Yeah. But then... But so I was playing jazz then, and improvising, I guess, then on clarinet, but I didn't really get it. That's the thing is, I didn't understand why and how, the mechanics of it. I would just go up there and play a bunch of notes, and they would say, yeah, good job, you're learning, and that was it. But then, listening to classic rock, I remember my dad once played for me Touch Me by the Doors, and there's Curtis Amy, who's a West Coast, or was a West Coast sax player. The West Coast jazz idiom is kind of... It's also known as cool jazz. That's like laid back on the beach jazz.
Sax on the beach.
Sax on the beach.
There we are.
It's not like smooth jazz. Cool jazz and smooth jazz sound similar, but they're not. Smooth jazz is crap. Cool jazz is not. to put it very black and white.
Oh, wow. That's kind of spitting it. Well, the thing of it is, have you ever played Portal 2?
I have not.
Okay. There's a point early on in the game where just like, to mentally stimulate you, smooth jazz will be deployed in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, no, like, that's like, bad. No, guys like Kenny G and, what's his name?
You're not a fan of Kenny G?
I am not a fan,
not a fan
of Kenny
G. Jesus?
No!
Oh, no, not Kenny Jesus!
And, who's the other guy that I hate, the alto sax player? Oh, David Sanborn, I hate him.
Oh, all right.
And that's actually, it's funny, he does a lot of collaborations with a jazz organ player I like, Joey DeFrancesco, and I once saw Joey DeFrancesco with my dad and my brother at Birdland, and it was funny because while we were talking before he went out and played his first set, we were slagging on Dave Sanborn, he sucks. He was in the house. He was sitting 2 tables away from us. He probably heard everything he said. And the only reason that we discovered it was that in the middle of Joey's set, he stopped playing after he stopped playing his song. And he goes, oh, thank you, everyone. I just want to give a shout out to my man, Dave Sanborn, who's right there, 2 tables down from us. And I turned and looked. It was Dave Sanborn. I'm like,
crap.
I mean, it's
that's the proverbial shitting on your waitress.
Yeah, more or less.
Right, she's about to take your drinks.
More or less. I don't think he was gonna come over and be like, "Yeah, well, F you." But I don't think he was gonna.
Hey,
be...
I'm famous.
Yeah. So I mean, things like that happen. But anyway, I mean, he used to be in a blues band. He used to be with Paul Butterfield, who was a badass blues guy. But then he went smooth jazz, and it's.
Been downhill ever since.
Yeah. What were we talking about? How did we get on that? Oh, cool. I was talking about Curtis Amy. And Curtis Amy, he played cool jazz, West Coast jazz, and that's like bossa nova type things. That's like Vince Guaraldi and Stan Getz. That's around that time. But Curtis Amy came from that too, but he used to play a lot of R&B sax too. So he rips a solo on the Doors song, and my dad's like, you gotta listen to that. So I heard that because I was learning how to play alto at the time. Mm-hmm. And then, as I was in 7th grade, 8th grade, around then, all my friends played guitar, bass, or drums. And I played clarinet and alto. I was the odd man out. I wanted to play rock, because at that time, I got really heavily into the Beatles. I started a huge Beatles phase then, and I had just bought my first major purchase, which was the iPod Video 30 gigs when
iPod
it first
video.
Came out. And now I have the most recent, and I guess the final incarnation of it, the 160 gig iPod Classic.
Holy crap!
That's why my family's all like, why do you have so much music? I'm like, because I can! Isn't it great? But anyway,
I wonder how much music, the entirety of music in iTunes library. Let's go with that.
I know.
I wonder how much that would actually fit.
I think I actually would probably have more room on my iPod than on my computer itself for music, I think. Because my computer holds everything else on top of it. I mean, it's a 500 gig drive. I mean, I probably could pull it off.
Well, I'm trying to imagine, like, the entirety of the iTunes library.
I got, like, 9,500 songs or something.
Would that fit on, like, an iPod Classic? Would that fit on, like, 5 iPods? I don't know.
I don't know.
Would you actually need one of those tower computers?
Because there's
a hell of a lot of music out there.
There is. But at that time, I was discovering it all, and I was getting into a lot of things that were either big at the time or were classic things, because my friend Jake was kind of, to me, like, he was like the guru. He knew all of the really good classic rock and stuff like that, and stuff that he goes, you know, if you like this, you'd probably like that. You know, this, you'd like that. And then, of course, I was into, like, alternative at the time, and I still am. I mean, I first discovered the White Stripes at that time, and I love the White Stripes. Jack White's a pain in the neck, but he's a... Yeah, I like the White Stripes.
Yeah, I was into the White Stripes. I think, like, 8th grade.
Yeah.
Something around... Like, Seven Nation Army was my jam.
Yeah. It was everyone's jam.
Everyone's
it's jam. The Pep Band's jam, too. But anyway, at that time, I was trying to amass my early iTunes collection, and my friend Jake says to me, you know, you like to read, you like to write a lot of things and poetry and things like that. You would love The Doors. And I said, okay. And I forgot about it. And then about a week after that, I'm perusing my mom and dad's CD cabinet for anything good. Because I found out you could rip CDs into it. And I said, this is great. I don't have to spend money. I don't have to spend my allowance. This is great. And I found the best of The Doors. And I said, oh, this is that band Jake mentioned. So I played it and it changed my life. From then on out, I was like, what is that instrument? Which was the Vox Continental organ. And here I am now. 9 years and 3 Vox organs later.
Oh, crap.
It's my favorite instrument. And I heard that, I'm like, oh, what is that? I want to know what that is. Is that a synthesizer? Is that whatever? So I remember at the time YouTube was beginning to be a thing.
Very true.
And I grabbed my...
Do a quick experiment, actually. When you get home or when you stop listening to this, whatever comes first, go to YouTube, put on a classic video that you enjoyed very early on when you discovered what YouTube
muffins.
Was. And then... yeah, muffin. And then realize how long ago that was.
I know.
Yeah, right?
Now, there's videos and things I'll come across that'll say 2005. I'm like, this existed in 2005?
This existed 10 years ago? Are you kidding?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's like, so I grab my dad's laptop and I put it on the piano because I wanted to, I'm getting ahead of myself. I first went to the family computer and I typed in just The Doors, just to see what would come up.
The Doors.
And it was a clip of them on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour in 1968. And it opens up on a shot of Ray Manzarek's hands on his Gibson organ and his Rhodes piano bass. And I realized he's playing two keyboards at once, and I'm like, whoa, that's really cool. What's that little one up there for? And pretty soon I was able to piece it together that there's no bass guitarist, that by default that probably is bass. And I saw that...
Process of elimination,
yeah,
right there.
And I realized then, wow, I want to do that. I'm freaking doing that. So I took my dad's laptop, I put it on top of my computer, and I just watched clips of The Doors, watched clips of people that I liked, like Ray Charles, Ray Manzarek and The Doors, of course, and other players that I would enjoy watching, all the Boogie Woogie players, Albert Ammons. And I just wanted to see what notes they were hitting, and that's how I taught myself how to play piano. But by then, because The Doors comes from improvisation, and Light My Fire is based on Coltrane's version of My Favorite Things. And I realized...
Isn't that where, like, your favorite riff comes from?
Yep.
Yep. Well, and it just sounds so out of place whenever you play that on the piano.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, and either way, I realized at that time, in my stocking for Christmas earlier that year...
Was an entire organ.
No. That wasn't until I was 17.
How'd they fit that in the stocking, then?
They draped the stocking over it. But, what was it? In my stocking, I had it the very best of John Coltrane. Because my mom saw him holding a soprano sax on the cover thinking it was a clarinet. You play clarinet, listen to John Coltrane. Coltrane never touched a clarinet, to my knowledge. To my knowledge, he didn't. And anyway, I'm like, whoa, I have John Coltrane. So I went and I listened, and the rest is history. John Coltrane, I perennially have phases of him because he had a lot of different phases. Coltrane. He started off playing, you know, bebop. He's coming from the Charlie Parker school of fit as many notes as you can in a measure. But then he invents really his own sort of
thing.
It's like a... It's very meditative because he was a very spiritual person, because after he got himself clean from heroin and alcohol, which is hard to do, you know, Billie Holiday couldn't do it. Like, before I was saying, you know, it overtook her life and she died as a result. Mm-hmm. And Coltrane, in a strange way, he probably died from that too. He died, he was 40 when he died. But he had been clean for about 10 years. But mm-hmm. he died of liver cancer. So it stands to reason that he probably did so much damage early on that, you know, it was inevitable. But at that point, he became
damage
very...
is done.
Yeah. But 1957, he stopped doing all that, and he credited a lot of it to his spirituality. And that shows in the music. A lot of it is based on a lot of world music. He was actually... He really... There's a type of... what do I call it?
Samba.
No.
Salsa.
It's an instrument.
Chutney.
Oh, it's called... It's not wrong. It's an Indian instrument.
Biwa? Sitar?
The Shanghai.
The Shanghai.
And it's like a...
My next guess was going to be shamisen, and no, that's Chinese.
Yeah.
Japanese. Racist.
Anyway, and the Shanghai is like an oboe, kind of. It's like a double reed instrument, but it's timbred to the same way as a soprano sax. And the player that he was really influenced by, this guy Bismillah Khan, influenced his style on soprano sax, because he was a tenor sax player almost entirely his career. He started on alto, went to tenor, stayed on tenor until 1961. Then on My Favorite Things, he breaks out the soprano. And he stuck that as, like, his... Not his main instrument. He would switch to tenor fairly regularly. But, like, it was his go-to, mostly. He would do that. He would pick that up before you'd pick up the tenor, I think. Hmm. And he was very influenced by the Indian style and then, like, the Hindu way of thinking about music and the philosophy of it all. And that really came out in the music and the improvisations. And then I was realizing while listening to that and then the Doors, they're doing very similar things just on electric instruments. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, this is really cool. And then just from there on out, the floodgates just opened. And I've been listening to a lot of random-ass crap since then. That's how I got it. So that's how, to answer your question, that's how I got into jazz, Dean.
Very roundabout answer. Most people would say, I listened to this and I started playing this. But you know what? I like
that's kind of what I did.
Well, like, how I met you, how I knew about you, and I know I've probably told you this story, like, a couple of times, but this is the first time it's actually being recorded.
I don't know if, someone else. I don't know if you did. I'm curious.
The thing of it was, I knew of you. There was this very open area, sort of like a commons ground, but it was, like, inside a building at college.
It's called the D'Angelo Center.
Which we just shortened down to DAC.
DAC.
So, in the DAC, a lot of people would just kind of, like, sit around, wait for things to happen, and it was every Wednesday morning, I would sit there... and wait for... I did, like, community service at the time, so I just kind of, like, waited for that to happen. I got there early, and it was, like, waiting about 2 hours or something. So I would just kind of, like, dick around on my computer. And, like, at the around the same time, without fail, just someone would start playing on this piano that was there, and... quite literally, it would be like it would be like a very nice set. It's very well done, but I think it was like this same collection of like six or so songs.
Well, I was woodshedding a lot of things at the time because I was learning a lot.
That's very true. And one of them was consistent. Like
Eleanor Rigby. Yeah,
in that mix somewhere, it was just like, wait a minute, I know that one. It's fucking Eleanor Rigby again. God damn it!
I'm sorry.
And then like after a couple of weeks of that, I ended up meeting up with my friend Anthony, who
Tony Nance,
who one day will be on the show, as well as Gerard.
Gerard Quinn, GQ. Yeah,
GQ. Maybe Katrina. Nah, I don't know.
Depends. Bring Katrina. You already said her name.
I don't know.
You're going to be publishing this. I'm going to skip over Katrina.
Well, it's like, no. It's hard to already get Anthony.
It's hard to get a hold of anybody, really.
Exactly. That's the problem. But regardless, so you were like playing the piano one time. I just go, hey, Dylan. I'm like, oh God, I actually feel kind of bad for thinking ill of him. He's such a cool guy.
Oh, thank you.
You were so dumb. Like the reason that like I like hanging out with Dylan.
Thanks.
Notably among all of my friends, it's just like he's got such like a positive mojo about him.
Thanks.
I'm not kidding. Like the day before was like it was pretty crappy out. It was kind of like depressing and rainy. And then I wasn't having high hopes for today or anything. I thought it was going to like pound down rain. And then it's like it's 55 degrees out. It's like there's not a cloud in the damn sky.
It's nice.
Yeah. So I'm putting that one on you. That's
thank you.
So when I started doing this podcast, I'm like, if there was ever a time I couldn't do it with Mike, how about Dylan? There
thank you.
So there's that.
And thank you.
He's so damn appreciative. And like, I think if I ever saw
it's
you
just
like,
good to be out.
If I ever saw you upset, I would have to think like a continent is sinking or something.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Jeez. Like,
that might be the one thing that would put you in a funk, I think.
The continent is sinking. Well, are there other continents? Is this the last continent that is
sinking? I think
so. Sink?
I think before that would be like, oh, North America is sinking. That's okay, we got South America. There's America still in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can that. Swim.
I can swim too.
Yeah.
Fun times.
Make
fun
it,
times.
Build a boat before it sinks. We'll be good.
And like since then, like I've always enjoyed like hearing the piano that you do, the jazz band as well. But it's like, when I see you playing piano, it's like you really friggin' get into it. There are some people who just kind of like play and they're like, they're focusing on what they're doing, and you're just like feeling it.
People ask me that a lot. They say, wow, you really get into it. Like, I mean, I shake my head, I close my eyes just because I'm listening to it and I'm enjoying it. Because to me, music is a very physiological experience as well as a mental and spiritual one. And they're all very united. Like, in a way, I like to think of it as like a meditation or like a yoga stance in a way. Huh. And that when I play...
Whereas instead of... Well, unless you are a very attractive person, yoga doesn't do much for everyone else.
Well, I practice yoga. I enjoy it.
But then there's like you playing the piano is like it's a meditative thing. It's like, okay, well, everyone else enjoys it now.
Oh, I'm glad. I hope so. I mean, to me, it's like chakras are opening up, and it's new ideas and possibilities and emotions are coming forward, and it's the way of it's a way to express yourself without words. I know that sounds really cliche and
it's
trite, but it's true.
It's a clashing way of what I know because growing up, what I've done is like I've sang. I actually sang well enough to get into like a state choir.
Wow.
Yeah, right. And then I didn't do chorus for like 2 years after that because I'm like, fuck it. I joined like a junior year of college, and then I went into Allstate for bass, and I ended up becoming a tenor.
Wow.
But before then, it was like, it was singing for precision. I played bass, and that was supposed to be precise. There wasn't really a lot of improvisation with that. I was part of a jazz vocal group, and even then, that was like more for precision than like, there were like improv parts, there were scat parts, and it was like, even then, it's like, eh, wasn't really opening up.
Well, scat, I mean, it's different because the way I approach jazz and everything, it's kind of more the philosophy that came out in the late 50s and into the 60s at that time, where, like, hard bop became a thing and post-bop became a thing. All the things that came out of that time with swing and bebop, because that's, you know, a lot of that is based... I'm not saying I don't feel soul when I hear it, and I do. It's very technologically driven. That's the thing. Like, technique-driven. I shouldn't say technologically. Technique-driven. So, like, I can listen to something and be impressed. Wow, you can cram a lot of notes in there. That's great. But if I don't feel anything, then I'll kind of let it cool out. That's not for me. I'd rather cry than be impressed. That's just how I am.
Well, and then like past the vocal and the bass thing, I also did ukulele, and that was like for the benefit of other people. I like performing for other people.
Right.
And what I did was I usually did like comedy songs because that's who I am.
Right. You that's know what fun. I mean? That's
yeah,
cool.
It's fun. But then even then, it was like it's a lot more. It's not a lot of like putting myself into it. It's like making sure that the chords were right, and then like letting myself be known through what I'm singing.
Ooh.
It was like, right. I want you to be entertained.
There you go. Know what I
mean? Yeah. But, and then seeing you, like, loosen up on the piano, it's like, wow, this is like, I'm feeling it. I'm actually, like, feeling
well,
the intensity
I mean,
with that.
If I can make that happen, then I guess that makes me a success. You know, it makes me smile. You know, if I can spread that happiness to others, I think that's just being a good citizen of, like, the earth. Thanks.
All right. I think we're good.